When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. And we're here for a special episode today. It's the first of several that are on this topic. And the topic is whether or not the Ravens ought to fire John Harbaugh. We see it on Twitter all the time. We see it discussed basically after any loss. We see a desire for fans, I think, to blame somebody for a lack of playoff success. This is not an unusual thing. It happens in every city. But we wanted to take the question seriously this offseason, since there's been probably an increasing minority of Ravens fans who actually think John Harbaugh ought to go. But it's a very vocal minority, clearly. And have a little bit more discussion about it this offseason. So we're planning a total of either two or three episodes to talk about it. This one is the building of a pros and cons list. Now, I'm not saying this is all the pros and cons, but I will say this is the best pros and cons list I received. It's from Karsten of the German Flock. Karsten, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I appreciate you being here. You guys may also know him as Keldrick on Twitter. It's Keldrick of the German Flock. Is that how you?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
well, really appreciate that. And your list was very well thought out. I appreciate this. I appreciate people who said they wanted a side. We've had actually very little success getting people who are interested in really getting down to the nitty gritty and trying to say why John Harbaugh should be fired. But you had a good list that included some reasons why you didn't think Harbaugh was up to snuff. But let's go through it in the order you would like. You'd like to start with the pros or the cons?
I think let's start with the pros, because the cons are not so many, and they're more. And the thing is, also, I mean, everybody knows pros, so it's an easier start for this topic.
Okay. Start us off with number one.
All right. So number one for me is actually the flexible mindset, because this is something like I heard on some podcasts, especially also like with the media saying like, oh, he's not so flexible. But the thing is, what I really like about John Harbaugh is when you see the era of Flacco and also now the era of Lamar Jackson is that he was basically changing the offense completely. And he was also not shy to do something like, okay, there's something somebody has never done for the past 20 years. Let's do that because we have the quarterback for that. And that's really something where I see that if you want to be successful, you have to do that, in my opinion, because you have to suit an offense to the quarterback. But also you have to suit the defense for the players we have. Mm-hmm. And but this is really something not every coach is doing in the NFL. There are a lot of people who say that this will be more like their system.
I agree. It's like the Shanahan system or the Kubiak system or whatever. They want to make the quarterback and the offense fit it, and they'll even try and discard certain players and try and bring in new ones to make them fit that. And the Ravens, having Lamar Jackson is a very, very big turning point for the organization. And it was interesting, in that 2018 season alone, the Ravens completely shifted the way they ran their team between having the Flacco offense for 9 games and the Lamar offense for the last 7 games. How much that changed, even under the same offensive coordinator at the time and whatnot. I guess I'd also like to point out that Brian Billick came in from Minnesota after the 1998 season, and Minnesota had a high-flying offense. They scored tons of points. It would have been easy for him to try and really build an offensive juggernaut. Ravens clearly did not have the personnel for doing that, but he adapted to having the greatest defense potentially of all time. It's not hard to necessarily adapt to that, but your offense has to do things differently in order to support that defense. And they got to be really willing to give up some third downs, to not go for it as often on fourth down. You got to be willing to run the ball more. You got to seek out talent for running the ball more. It just, they did a lot of that, of what the 2000 Ravens did, was enabled by what the offense was willing to do, even though they weren't good. They certainly got a lot of things done in terms of keeping control of football.
So, yeah, that's the thing is, actually, you know, when you talk about this, this is also something where we can go to point two on my list, which is the culture. Because the change from Brian Billick to John Harbaugh was a massive one. I mean, he was hired for the job. And for me, that was interesting because, I mean, my time when I was starting to watch the Ravens was after their second Super Bowl. So I never experienced that live in the seasons. Also in Germany, watching a season only recently got really, really good. So like in 2014-15, it started that you could see a season of the NFL instead of just playoffs or Super Bowl. So, but for example, my shout out there to Sarah Allison, because when she was with the Ravens there, she did the Man of the Crowd, and she explained in detail what was happening there. And this is also something which I really like, that, I mean, they wanted to have a balanced team, and what John Harbaugh was doing, he was like really changing it. And this was really, really hard. And you have to have the character for that. And you can also see this still at M&T Bank Stadium when you go through the locker room, when you go even through the VIP lounge, all the quotes of the players and also things, and little things, and especially also at the castle, you can see all these like little snippets John Harbaugh was doing just to motivate his players. And this is also part of the culture. And I really like that.
I mean, I do like the culture that the Ravens have. The Ravens have a great top-to-bottom culture in terms of the organization just getting it. They get it in terms of the draft. They get it in terms of the desire to go for comp picks. They get it in terms of their hiring practices top-to-bottom, because Bisciotti is from the hiring business. What they did when they hired Harbaugh and really exposed their hiring process to their fan base was fantastic. I mean, just the way it was done was just first class all the way through. I do think John has done a great job of keeping a high level of culture. I think there's a culture of accountability. I think it took time for that actually to come in. Ray Lewis made some very unfortunate comments after the 2008 season, saying that Rex Ryan was really the head coach of the Ravens that year. Well, that's a pile of bullshit. I mean, that just is something that he shouldn't have said anyway. But it's also the kind of thing that you'd never hear Harbaugh say. He wouldn't. Attempt to throw a player under the bus, for example, in that manner.
And that's also a thing what I really like about him in this manner, is that, you know, if you want to build trust, you don't throw your buddies under the bus. You don't do that. You don't do that for your players. You do that. Don't do that for anybody. Because if you throw somebody on the bus, this can easily really grow as a cancer in the locker room. And then all the motivation, all the season can just go sideways. And that's really also what I really like about him, that every time you have a press conference, you only can guess what he really thinks about maybe some things, because of course you always have an opinion, but he's never doing that publicly. And that's also one thing where you have that with the same, also with EDC and also Steve Bisciotti, that this first class mentality, it's also, he's also a big part of that.
Yeah, very, very much so. Don't say anything about a player if you don't have anything nice to say, is a lot of what they do. There's only been a few players where the saltiness has really been apparent in terms of he's not happy with a player who's there now. I did hear it said, particularly early in the Harbaugh tenure, that there were some players he would have liked to get rid of, that the organization, the GM didn't want to get rid of. And so they had to have some calming down sessions about that. I think in recent years, that's probably changed a little bit. We can talk about the doghouse next if you want, because I think that, you know, how some players get in a position where they're either not getting playing time or they don't have the role they expect, or more importantly, they're just completely taken out of the picture and maybe even a game day inactive because of things they're doing in practice. I think it, large part, has been a Harbaugh pro over the years and not a con.
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, you can see it as a negative if like games go like really bad or something. You think like, oh, this player could have made a difference. But on the other hand, you know, what you're saying to people, like for example, I think it was Deontay Johnson, the receiver, who just got like ejected after like three games. I mean, what about Tylan Wallace? Like, he would have been really mad because he was working his ass off the last 3-4 years with ups and downs, and huge ups and some downs. And then there's this guy coming off, and because he was like an early round talent, he's now giving more snaps. No, that's not a good thing for the locker room, especially when you see it now that everybody wants to work really hard for some people.
Yeah, that is really important. Your players all wanting to work hard, getting playing time, thinking they have a chance at it, it's all very important. And Tylan Wallace massively outplayed Johnson. I can't tell you how happy I am that Johnson had this happen in Baltimore and then went to Houston and had the same thing happen again. Because there's still, frankly, what are now proven to be idiots out there who thought, as soon as he was signed by the Texans, that, see, it was all Harbaugh's fault, kind of thing. And then the Texans release him. It's like, well, no, it wasn't. You know, this other playoff organization also got rid of him as well. So
that's also where we're coming back from, basically, before saying like he's never throwing the players on the bus, even when they're doing like really bad things. I mean, it was also the same thing with Earl Thomas back in the day, like when he was messing up big time. And still, he was always like really talking good about him, trying to, even afterwards, having like a good relationship with them.
Yeah, the Earl Thomas thing came to a head when they had a fight. He had a fight with Chuck Clark, and Chuck Clark was calling him out for doing it. And that's, by the way, that's the ideal way for those things to be resolved, is for a player-on-player interaction to basically bring out the worst characteristics in the guy you're trying to get rid of anyway. It's ideal if that's where it happens. If it can be done by a firm hand from the coach and then maybe not understood by other people, but that's the way it happened with Clark. Clark proved himself a leader in that moment.
Yeah. The thing is also what I really like when we're talking like about like when things happening is what I really like about Tyler is he's willing to listen to the people. I mean, also one situation we had like recently in the last season is the Marcus Williams situation. Mm-hmm. But what you were hearing is that although like Marcus Williams was not playing, he's probably unfortunately leaving us because of his lack of play and all that. But you can hear, or you were hearing, that John Harbaugh was always like having a conversation with them, like listening to the players, listening to their input, also listening to people, even when there were some things. And I really like that, because this is really one of the most important things. What I also learned, like when you're working in a company or something, in a team, the most important thing is to listen.
It's certainly critically important, and you earn a currency with your players when you do it, or your employees if in the work situation you're like you're talking about. I do think the decision had been made on both players, on both Jackson and Williams. And I think the difference between the two, if I had to guess, and this is, again, credit to the Ravens for not letting out, let us know exactly what happened, is that Jackson threw a tantrum basically over his dislike of how he was being used in Orr's defense, and they felt the need to get rid of him. They did, by the way, give him a chance to play alone on the back end for 1 week, and he gave up three touchdowns in that loss to Cleveland, two as a coverage guy and a third on a missed tackle. That was unbelievably bad play, but it's also very clear that the fact that when the Ravens changed out both safeties, when they took Marcus Williams off the field and benched him, and moved Washington and Hamilton to the back end, night and day difference in defensive performance. They went from near the bottom of the entire league in pass defense to the very top, and that was really something. And very hard change to make to any unit during the season. Very hard to make a change that's as effective as that during the season.
Yeah, but that's also because I feel like he has a good feel for his coaches, like giving them also the trust to work through growing pains. I mean, it would have been easy to basically bench Zach Orr because the first games he was not doing a good job. But what they did instead, and that's also feel like this is like a grown man thing. Okay, if you feel you have struggles and these struggles are mighty, then try to get some help. So so they got DNPs just because they had this brain drain in the off season, and this brain drain was just like going into the season. And that's also where I see a really quality, because you know, if you would have been somebody who feel like, oh yeah, I'm really good in my job and I'm the best, you would have not doing that, because you think like, okay, maybe this guy is not just work enough. But John Harbaugh was really open to this idea. Okay, hey, what about getting somebody who knows you very well, but also knows the system very well, and he can help you?
Just a quality control person, obviously. I don't know what Orr's actual reaction to bringing back DNPs was, and we'll never know. Not at the base level, because he may have really been like, boy, you know, I like Dean, but I don't know if I really want him back here looking over my shoulder on every play. He might have felt like that. And if he did, that's okay. But he had the right outward posture towards the thing. And they brought in Chuck Pagano, which kind of tells me that there wasn't any sort of a problem between Pease and Orr, because you're doubling down on that strategy to bring in somebody like Pagano. I will say also that Chris Hewitt, Harbaugh showed incredible patience letting him get through this season, with the failures of the safeties really showing up, because Hewitt was a guy who really should be front and center on fixing that, along with Orr and along with, you know, whoever else you call in to provide advice. But he waited till the end of the season. Chris Hewitt is now gone. They hired a new DBs coach today, who's a young guy, looks like a dynasty building guy. D'Alessio, I believe it is. It's like D'Alessandro D'Alessio, I think is correct. So it's an extra, a former Chiefs DB. So that'll be exciting to see how that actually plays out. But they also brought back Chuck Pagano. And Chuck Pagano, if you're looking around, he's not a long-term stay with the Ravens. You know, he's 66. He's older than Harbaugh. I think he's 4 years older than Harbaugh. And he won't be here for a long time, but he can add a lot to the culture during that time. He can add a lot to the building of the dynasty coaches that they now have in the inside linebacker group with Tyler Santucci and now on the DB side. So very happy with the way he builds the coaching staff.
Yeah, that's where we come to also another pro I really like about John Harbaugh. And actually, I have to say, I also found out about the other podcast, The Ravens War, because they had this interview with Wink Martindale, which was basically very crazy because he was playing golf halftime of the interview. But one of the most important snippets of this is that Wink Martindale was acknowledging that the defense system is basically John Harbaugh. I mean, of course, Wink Martindale was playing like a key part of that. But I mean, if you see how many coordinators we had and how successful the defense was for the past like 10, 12 years under John Harbaugh, and there were some like bumps, but they were not really, really, really big. And you can see this success. And that's also something where you see that he is like really good in developing such things.
Philosophically, I like that Wink credited Harbaugh as much as he did. Harbaugh is an X's and O's guy. He doesn't really talk that way at the podium. He doesn't really try and usurp the authority of either coordinator, which is a good thing. But he does have an input into it. And there was some talk after the first half against the Patriots in the 2012 playoff run. They were down 13-7. And he said over the microphone, it was part of the Super Bowl video. They said, we're going to have to open it up in the second half, kind of thing. And they did. The Patriots had no answer for Flacco in the shotgun play after play. That was a wonderful half of football that they had. But I would say that individually, the defensive coordinators have all been very different in terms of how they've run the defense. So I don't completely buy. There might be a baseline that's Harbaugh, but that there's a and an expectation that is Harbaugh. But the way that Martindale differed from Pease, for example, in terms of the amount of pressure, and then McDonald came in and was different in terms of how he did it. And then of course we got Zach Orr, and he's a little bit different in terms of changing to some of the styles.
Of course.
So it's been great.
So, but I would say, yeah. So, of course, I mean, everybody has his own style and all that. But I feel like this continuity and also like how smooth it was going, this is something where you can see that Hunter Harbaugh is really good and that he's like a really good manager and also like empowering people to be the best of themselves.
I like that. I like that way of putting it.
All right. Yeah. And that's really, but also I feel like this is also the good thing, you know, being the manager is the thing you have to be as a head coach. But also like keep this always in mind, always also, I mean, when you see like he's coaching from 08 now till 2025 already, mm-hmm. This is also a massive culture change in how like the players are like thinking and all that. I mean, I'm 38. So, and when I'm seeing like people who are 25, this is for me, like nowadays, I feel like an old guy. But with Harbaugh, this is something where I feel like he never gets old. He's always like also curious to see what the players are doing, what their ideas are, what their hobbies are and all that. And that's like really, really cool. And you can see that because it clicks with also the young people, but also with the older veteran guys.
Yeah, there have been some questions about Harb's relatability over the years. I think his relatability is different. Zach Orr clearly is a younger, more recent player. You know, they brought back Anthony Levine as well to coach mm-hmm. special teams. Very relatable players. They've been right there. Anthony Weaver last year is a guy who got right in there and did very physical rip move reps against his players, meaning his players have to try and rip him. And you know, he's for a while he was taking it just on his arms, and I'm like, boy, I would not do that. No matter, you know, at his age, certainly I wouldn't do it. I'd be wearing padding or something. And then finally he put on some pads to do it, which is more natural. Relatable coaches are great. Okay. But there's a different kind of relatable that Harbaugh is that you know exactly what you're going to get from him in terms of the expectations of you, in terms of what's going to make him happy. He's not going to surprise you, he's not going to fly off the handle at an unexpected time. Basically, if he yells at you, you probably deserved it. And that's part of the good thing. You have Doghouse on your list here. And I did want to talk through that just a little bit more, because I think there's been one player, I really tried to think back of players who had been doghoused by Harbaugh that really worked out somewhere else.
So, yeah. The thing is about the doghouse, I cannot honestly talk about like specific players and all that, because my mind is not as functional with these like game things. But the thing is about the doghouse, this is also something I feel like can sometimes be also a con, in the way that like mm-hmm. if you're in the doghouse, you're kind of a little bit doomed for this period. But as we talked before in the beginning, it's also very important for the culture, like for the team spirit and all that, because you have to go through that. And if you, and that's also something where I really like, because if you're, for example, an unrestricted free agent, if you are a star player. If you're nobody, it doesn't matter. If you're in the doghouse, you're in the doghouse, and you have to work through it. And also, this is something where I feel like that if you've gone through that, then you earned also the trust of him. And that's also something where I feel like it's really, really important.
Yeah, so in terms of players who ever got through the doghouse, the one I can think of is McKinney, who spent the whole season on the bench, then got put in basically for the playoffs, and the Ravens reallocated their offensive line to basically moved Orr back to right tackle, where he was more effective, and moved Osemele from right tackle to left guard, where he was tremendously effective for that postseason run. That's a good escape from the doghouse. McKinney had lots of reasons to be in the doghouse too. They just needed him, and Harbaugh was able to overcome that at the right time, which I thought was good. Ben Cleveland, we don't know yet. If Ben Cleveland were to play well somewhere else, it could be reason. But honestly, we don't know yet, and so we'll have to see that actually happen. If Ben Cleveland all of a sudden becomes a 4-year starter for some other team, and the Ravens really missed out on that, I'll be a little bit upset about it. But it is what it is. The last player, go ahead.
I think maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm right or wrong. So, but I think that maybe Falele also was part of a little bit in the doghouse because he wasn't really as a tackler, not playing like really well, but he got through that and now he's our starting right guard. And that is also like a really good thing where I feel like this was also going through that.
I honestly don't think Falele was ever in the doghouse. He didn't play well at right tackles. He wasn't on the field. Yeah. But they moved him to right guard, and I think that was largely a Joe D thing. I think Joe D loved him, and so he was a hard worker. He really wanted him to succeed. Just the way I saw Joe D interact with Falele and all the, he got on top of him. He's really pushing him. You could tell he was his project, and to see him actually succeed at the end of these years is a really really cool thing. So I hope if you don't like Daniel Falele at this point, you're in for another long year next year because he's going to be the starting right guard. He's probably going to look like crap doing it, and he's probably going to have pretty good results if the last five games are any kind of a indication. So anyway, I want to go back to one player I think really got steamrolled by the doghouse in a way at the time I thought was very bad for the team, and that's Jared Gaither. So in 2010, it's been a few years. I know, Carson, this kind of predates you a little bit, but I'm going to tell the story anyway. In 2010, Jared Gaither got told that they were moving Michael Orr to left tackle. Now, Michael Orr in 2009 had an outstanding year at right tackle. He'd also played some left tackle in Gaither's absence due to injury, and he played very poorly there. It was like night and day how different he was on each side of the line. I still think Michael Orr probably could have had a borderline Hall of Fame career, certainly made multiple Pro Bowls, if he'd have stayed at right tackle his whole career. But he didn't. He wanted to play left tackle, and obviously a lot of players do because they really want the big money. He stuck some other people with some big contracts, Michael Orr did, and really didn't have the kind of career he otherwise might have had. When he did play well for the Ravens, it was at right tackle, usually with either McKinney or Monroe at one point playing left tackle for the Ravens, but his decent play was there. Jared Gaither, after two very fine years at left tackle, where he had been a good left tackle and a terrible teammate by all accounts, was told he's going to be playing right tackle, and they're going to switch him and Orr for the 2010 season. Then he came up with a back injury that sidelined him for that season. And after that, the Chargers re-signed him. Chargers got him cheap, and then he gave them four great games, I think in 2011. And then he was signed to a 4-year deal, where the Chargers then ate an old maid contract. And it was just one of the biggest swindles that ever was happened. Jared Gaither basically was capable of throwing his career away. So John Harbaugh saw those characteristics clearly, didn't make a class A move to move Orr to left tackle. I still think that was a failure, but it was a good move in terms of the doghouse proved to be correct and actually saved the Ravens a lot of money and cap space down the line by not re-signing Gaither.
All right, so I think we can now go to the cons because
did you miss any? I see you missed one. Is he keeps the team competitive all the time? The consistent success has been outstanding.
True.
But I had two other things. Is the time of day? Harbaugh can get a team ready to play any time of day. He knows how to schedule a team to be ready to play at a time of day. And the prime time record shines through in terms of that. They're whatever they are in 23-3 at home in prime time, but they have a great prime time record overall. The other thing, they're 25-0 now under Harbaugh as an 11-plus point favorite. Now, most even great coaches have some losses that occur during, you know, in such situations, even though you should win about pretty close to 90% of your games in those situations. Most coaches aren't able to do that. That's remarkable. The Ravens as an organization are 33-0 as an 11-plus point favorite in their history.
Yeah, and also things when you see like also the games after the bye, they're mostly wins.
Yes,
and that's also very that's really impressive, because I mean, if you're like having an off week and getting all the players into the right mindset for the game afterwards, that's really dedication and preparation what you're doing there. And also, I mean, look at how many playoff dances we had in the past years, and we had a quarterback change in there. And this is also really impressive, especially, I mean, of course, yeah, obviously the season ended in a drought in the way that we lost in the playoffs, but we're in the dance. And when you're in the dance, anything can happen. There are some things, that's why we are also going to the cons about that. But I mean, every time being able to do that is, of course, talent of the players and having the players and management, but it's also a lot of coaching, because you have to get them through the grind of the whole season to get into the playoffs, then also win some games. And I mean, you can also see that with another great coach, I mean, Mike Tomlin, but he's a really good coach. But the Steelers have not been in the playoffs since, I think it was like
Yeah, 2016.
Yeah, 2016. Very long time.
So they've lost their last six in the playoffs. So you can at least point to that and say there's teams with a lot worse situation. The Ravens are 3-5 with Lamar, right? Yeah, they're 2-4 coming in this year. I think they're 3-5 now with Lamar. But that's really like 5-5 when you include buys earned, which I think is is important and appropriate. I mean, there's only 11 playoff wins to go around every year. Yes, we have high expectations here in Baltimore. Yes, Lamar Jackson is here, so we should have high expectations. But I don't know that it's really fair to have every year be a Super Bowl or bust decision for John Harbaugh, when for most other coaches, it's a you make the playoffs, you have a huge win. It's you come from relegation league proper football, we'll call it soccer, in Europe, where you know, just maintaining Premier League or the top tier league, what's the top league in
Germany? It's Bundesliga, like the first league, and then you have in Europe the Champions League, where like and actually the thing is, you can say that because we have a different system Germany with soccer, that actually the Champions League is more competitive, because in the Bundesliga it's about like, I mean, I'm not a good soccer player, but like I would say it's also like here that if you have, for example, Bayern Munich, like Bayern Munich, this is a team where they have more resources than other Bundesliga teams. Mm-hmm. And this is making a big difference. But if you go to the Champions League, that's basically like the NFL in the way.
It's got a salary cap-ish type structure.
They don't have any cap structure, but because all the teams are now on a level where they're equal. This is in the NFL by definition. But the thing is, honestly, I'm not a soccer fan, so there are much better people talking, and there are much people who don't know that. So please, all the Germans, don't brush me for that.
So some of this is from memory of watching a lot of English sports on one of my trips to Britain there, one of the soccer pundits was saying, basically was talking down a particular coach, maybe he was responding to a fan, but whoever was negative on the coach said he hasn't really done anything in his time as a coach of such and such a team, and it's like all three people responding to that almost responded in unison, saying he's retained Premier League status year after year without being relegated. You know, it had something like a 16 or 18 year record of not being that, but being a mid-table kind of a team. Mm-hmm. We've gotten so spoiled in our expectations of the Ravens. And damn it, we want somebody to blame when the Ravens are out of the playoffs. And John Harbaugh is the first person we look to because he's in control of the whole thing. It's got to be his fault. And by the way, you can't blame Lamar Jackson for multiple reasons, but the large one being you can't change Lamar Jackson. You can change Harbaugh, but there's no changing Lamar Jackson. He's here for the foreseeable future, and he's going to be the quarterback. Yeah.
So that's, I think, a good moment where we can go to basically the cons of John Harbaugh. And I mean, what I had as a con and a pro, we can say that, is that John Harbaugh does, during the games, like several really aggressive decisions. Like, for example, this season when they played on the fourth down on their own 25, something like that. That was like really aggressive, because when it backfires, something like that, you can see that all the fans and also all the media are really on his ass.
Not this media. Okay, but not this media guy. I'll say this for starters. I've said this on the radio and other places. You've heard me say this on the show before, probably. But mathematicians, as a group, think head coaches are pussies. They don't go for it nearly enough on fourth down, and the pace. Analytics, football math, whatever you want to call it, is taking over the game. Okay, it's just been, the pace of it has been glacially slow with some of the coaches who've been held back. And Mike Tomlin is the perfect example of a coach who just, he's not looking to change at all. John Harbaugh has actually been very good about embracing it and going for it more and more and more on fourth down. Not as much as the most aggressive coaches in the league, who are just a little bit wussies. They're just a little bit fearful of their own shadow. Even Brandon Staley and people like that for the Chargers, who are the most aggressive of all NFL coaches, probably are still not aggressive enough for the average mathematician who really appreciates the game. And you know, since we're so results oriented as fans, didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
I think there's always a tendency that every time he makes it, it was a great decision. Every time he misses it, it was a bad decision. So it's just all results-based. And if you look at the results overall have been overwhelmingly positive for Harbaugh in terms of the exchange of value on those fourth down decisions. Yes, he's missed some 2-point conversions that have cost the team. He didn't miss them personally, but he called for them. And still, it's something that I much prefer to have somebody who's willing to take the appropriate gambles than somebody who's not willing to take the appropriate gambles.
Yeah. And also, I mean, you can see it also again with the players. I mean, like this one memory of Wired where like he's asking his players and they want to go for it and then they succeed. And especially Lamar's on fire. But also, well, that's also interesting for me was that actually we had, I think this season, the same situation, just this time Lamar said no. We don't go for it because we just want to have the Steelers not go again back and try to score or something like that. That was also where you can see it.
I've never heard of a quarterback doing that. That's funny. So yeah, there's two big times I can remember in the Lamar era where he asked Lamar. The first one was back in Lamar's second season in 2019, mm-hmm. where they were playing Seattle. And he says, Lamar, you want to go for it? And he goes, yeah, I want to go for it. And then he turns to Marshall Yanda. He says, should we go for it? Yanda goes, yeah, kind of thing. And he gave the appropriate positive response. Then they had that 4th-and-2 run where Lamar scored an 8-yard touchdown run on QB power. Okay, so that was one. The second came in the 2022 win, I think, against the Chiefs. The one where they beat him 36-35. One of the first several games of the season at home, and they had to go for it on 4th-and-1 at their own 45 or so to close out the game with about a minute left rather than punt the ball. And they decided to go for it. It was completely the correct play by any kind of mathematical analysis of that. But he asked Lamar as he came off the field, hey, Lamar, you want to go for it? Lamar, you want to go for it? And he said, yeah, sent him back in. They ran effectively the same play to the other side, a big QB power play, and they got it. I do like asking your players when you know what the answer is, okay? But I don't like asking the player. I like the getting the player hyped up to do it. If Lamar truly ever said no on a 4th-and-2 or a 4th-and-3 and Harbaugh really thought it was the right move, I think he's then upset that he asked the question. So he probably should just say what he wants to happen each time and hope that works out.
True. So let's go maybe to the next one, because this is where we come into the thing where I feel like this is something happening, especially in the playoffs. That was that when you see these games on the past years, there is this problem that when the game gets really sideways, I have a feeling like in the past years that the team was too much really deviating from the game identity. We had this with J.K. Dobbins. I honestly have to say, this last playoff game against the Bills, it didn't feel like it, but I felt like a little bit that maybe in the fourth quarter, more of Henry would have been nice, although it didn't make the big difference. But I feel like this is like a theme we have through the past 4 years.
Henry's certainly effective in the game. The Ravens, I mean, in that game, they ran the ball effectively. They passed the ball effectively. They did everything well, except they turned the ball over. And so unless you're going to mandate that those aren't turnovers somehow, which as you coach, you can't do. You can just, improve the chances. The only real problem I had with play calling in the game was not running the ball in the last 3 minutes when they really needed to grind out the clock to do that. Exactly. And that's really more of a game management thing. I did have that on my list of cons, by the way, that I added to yours. So we'll talk about that when it's appropriate.
Yeah, but I think maybe this is also something which changed also, like, because they had this bad experience in the past years. But before, like, the games with J.K. Dobbins, I mean, we all remember this moment where J.K. Dobbins basically said, like, you should have given the ball to me and I would have made it. So that's also where, like, sometimes I feel like this is... it's happening like now and then when he's deviating or they're deviating from the game identity. And I feel like sometimes maybe give him just like a little bit more time. That would be really, really great. Just like a little bit more.
Okay. Lots of game script questions come into that. I don't want to go too deep into that one because we'd spend a long time talking about it. Do you want to talk about game management and clock management now?
Yeah. So this is where I feel like this can also be sometimes a con. I mean, I don't remember which game it was, but this was this one game, for example, this season, where you felt like, why is John Harbaugh taking like so many timeouts so early? And this is something which is also like reoccurring that sometimes you feel like, why is he doing that? And that's where I also feel like, I mean, or some people feel like it could be that this situation, maybe he needs some help, maybe... this is something which is happening when there's a lot of emotions in the game or something. I don't know. What do you say?
He has lots of help on the headset and in person. I think it, I'm not sure whether Randy Brown, the kicking coach, is the guy who's supposed to help him with game management decisions, but there is a guy who's supposed to help him with game management decisions. And there's analysts that are directly on that headset loop that that should be going in real time, telling him, hey, we'd like to slow down this drive or not. I don't know what the rules are, though, on radio silence for that headset loop, because they got to be careful. They only have a few, you know, a few seconds to get that play in and make sure it's done properly. And if there's a communication with Harbaugh, it may be more difficult than we think for the mathematicians to get his attention.
Yeah, the thing is, like, for me, it could be that this were the things where actually these things were costing us the game. I mean, especially like in the Eagles game, when you see that Justin Tigers is having some problems, of course, you have to give him the trust and all that. But this was where it was very, really close. And maybe if we would have played instead of kicking in the game, would have made the difference. Also, maybe for the seed and all that.
Yes, I can understand that. I mean, the egregious losses to the Browns and the Raiders are certainly worse. That Eagles team beat the Ravens up pretty good in the game that they played. They happened to come back and score a touchdown late to make it a one score game. But I don't think I'd get too much on game management on what happened in that game. That said, you know, what I want people to do when we're going over this list, and we're gonna further expand this when we have a panel discussion about this, I want people to try and not only, you know, put a rating on Harbaugh for what he does and consider the good and the bad that he does, but also put a weighting in terms of how important this item is. And I think one of the things we'd find, particularly one thing that's been really tossed out, has been when he called two consecutive timeouts. It's a bad mistake notionally. It's a very bad mistake that a coaching can make. And he'll always have the two timeout game. In terms of a severity of error, it's not a serious error at all. I don't even remember if the Ravens won or lost the game. It was just a stupid mistake. It could have cost them something. It's very actually unlikely to cost them an entire football game, the fact that he called two consecutive timeouts.
Yeah. When we come to like things where I feel like can be like stupid, but I put this in parentheses because this is also a thing. It's where I feel like where John Harbaugh, like in the past years, had some problems with the team discipline. I mean, when you see like a lot of games, we had like so many yards lost because of some stupid errors.
You're specifically talking penalties being the discipline problem.
Okay. Yes.
But you're not talking about Harbaugh is not disciplining the players enough, because I mean he disciplines.
No. I'm talking about the disciplines during the game, and this is something where you practice it for, where you like practice hard, and I think this should be something where you as a head coach should have an eye on that. And this is something where I was having the feeling like especially the past two seasons we're having a lot of these problems where you say like, hey, why don't you do that in training camp more? Why don't you do that there more? I mean, although I have to say that this season they turned it around in the past like games of the season, especially in the playoffs, they didn't have these problems anymore. But still, like the past two, like probably 3 years, we had so many yardages because of just little errors which were costing us. And it was always feeling like, oh, hey, we are in a good situation. And there comes the flag.
Two things about this. The first is that these are not the most important penalties, but they're annoying penalties, are the false starts by the offensive line, generally speaking. They instituted a thing in training camp this year where you had to run a lap on any false start. And so the linemen were running a lot of laps. So it was just interesting to see. It's majoring in minors to do that. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'd much rather have them run three laps for a holding call, say, than run, particularly a run play that's outside of the frame. Those are the ones that really need to be avoided. Warhop did not have an easy position that he was coming into as the offensive line coach following Joe D, but the Ravens really cut down their offensive line penalties at the end of the year, specifically Fa'alele and McCary, who'd had a lot of problems with that, really cut down on theirs. So Stanley as well had more problems early in the season than he did late. That was all positive. one thing that I've not been as happy about is I don't think the Ravens have been successful in really reducing their roughing the passer penalties as much as they should have. They hit the quarterback a lot, so it's a big concern. You do want to knock the quarterback down. You want to be aggressive. You want to injure the quarterback if you can, but you don't want to do it at a point where it's going to be called. And it seems to be called more and more. You just got to understand how that happens and try and avoid those penalties. And that's a player and coach thing, but the coach obviously is responsible for trying to make sure that that's carried out.
Yeah. And then I would say we come to the next point. And I have to say, this is like, I put it as a con, but it's also really hard because this is, I think, one of the hardest things for the team to find out is that these pressure situations in the playoffs. I mean, we've been in the playoffs in really good position, like for the past 4 years with Lamar and the team. And it always was coming down to like these little mistakes, which were basically turning the game sideways, these turnovers and all that. And I feel like maybe John Harbaugh could have made a better influence in maybe putting them in training situations more into pressure things and all that. I mean, it could also be that this is like a player character thing, as some people are rumoring about, like, do you have the dog mentality in the game? But I feel like also this could be something where like John Harbaugh needs to have maybe more focus this offseason. And he was not doing that for the past seasons. But yeah, that's just, you know, talking as a fan.
If you look at how things have gone for the Ravens, Lamar himself has been very good about reducing his turnovers over the years and, mm-hmm. and you know, getting to this 2024 season. You know, where he's got 41 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. And then things went bad in the playoffs. A bad snap causes a fumble effectively or is responsible for about half of it. And then you have an interception thrown on maybe a route that wasn't run properly, but probably that one's all entirely on Lamar. Then you have Andrews fumbling the ball. It doesn't have anything to do with Lamar specifically. Andrews is trying to make a play. It was an incredibly costly fumble, the Andrews fumble. It really probably cost the Ravens the game right there. I have a hard time blaming him for the playoff turnovers. Remember, okay, going back a few years, 22, it wasn't mm-hmm. even Jackson. It was Huntley. We were lucky to be in the game, but Huntley fumbled the ball to 1 yard line and got returned for a touchdown, and that was the lights went out. So 23 and 24, they had Jackson, and either of those years, you could point to it and say Jackson is the combination of Jackson and Harbaugh is responsible for losing these football games. In 24, I don't think you can blame it on Jackson and Harbaugh at all. I think mm-hmm. you blame it on the players on the field. In 23, there were some identity questions about did they run the football enough. They addressed it by picking up Derrick Henry. So at least organizationally, they addressed that question and they had an answer for it. But it's something we need to build. And it belongs on the con list is playoff results. And then you have to actually ask yourself, this is, I'm talking to future panelists here, is how much of that was really Harbaugh? How important is that factor relative to these other things that are on either the pros or the cons list?
Yeah. That's also a really hard thing because, I mean, if you think about like, if you would do a change because you feel like he's like not putting us in the position of going to the Super Bowl, like if somebody was thinking about that, like, who would you else ask for that? Because, I mean, we're always in the dance. We're always in the playoffs. We're always very, very close. It's just minor things happening. That's a really hard question. And the only thing I would wish probably maybe for this offseason is, like, when they're doing training camp, when they're doing, like, the OTAs and all that, that they maybe put more an emphasis on putting the players into pressure situations so that they, like, maybe can shake off a little bit more and bid from there so that we finally have this one game where we break through this wall and finally be in the big game.
All right. I don't know if there's a way to do that, like to simulate conference championship game pressure in a preseason mm-hmm. game, but we could think about what that would mean there. Let's see. One thing I think we kind of skipped over is how long it's taken him to make some unpopular decisions.
I was actually saving that for the last because okay. For me, this is like the one thing where I feel like this could be like a real negative for John Harbaugh in the way that, I mean, it's also part of the culture because the culture is built on the way also the Patriots are doing the same or we're doing the same, like longevity. Also the Steelers doing the same. Like you want to have like a really good culture where you don't change too much because this can cause chaos and all that. But there are some decisions where it's better. I don't know if this is an English saying as well, but in Germany we say sometimes it's better to have a bitter end than the bitterness without an end. In the way that if it takes
a bitter
too
end
long,
than bitterness about the end.
Something like that, like basically saying like don't do that forever or don't do it too long. And I felt like there are like two decisions which pop in my mind. Is the one is the Greg Roman situation where just Lamar outgrew the system, and also the problem is that all the NFL defenses just got into the system so easily in the last year of Roman that this was really not feasible to like grow there more because the system was not feasible in the end. And also the other thing is the Saunders situation in the training room, where I felt like this could be or could have happened already when we had the COVID year and he was breaking the COVID rules, which was a really bad situation for the team because a lot of players got COVID and this was putting us in 2020 also in a bad situation in the game. And then we had these problems with players where they had some problems because of the training and all that. I mean, you can also see the difference now. I mean, the team after this change now is one of the healthiest in the NFL. And it's also one of the healthiest for the past 2-3 years. I've seen them like over like 10, 20 years.
Okay, I think that's a good one. Your soccer teams, part of it is the nature of what they wear to play the game, can do more to look at their injuries in real time than football players can. I don't know if you heard the episode by the two Brazilian guys who came on and talked about their new system. Well, anyway, they have a heat-based system to kind of proactively detect muscle pulls before they happen so they can judge you know how much heat there's. So it's a really great system, and they got some South American teams to buy into it. It'd be a great system for the US, but what it basically requires players to do is go in probably after practice, and they'd have to basically get naked, go in a special room and get a scan to tell if they're, you know, what potential muscle injuries they might have. So it's a great idea. It's just this because of what you wear for soccer is not very much. It's easier to do that without basically taking off a bunch of equipment. So I really love the thought that went with this. I don't know how applicable it could be to football, but I'm sure they'll come up with something because the technology is getting better and better for all sorts of these things to figure out injuries ahead of time.
I mean, you can also see that also the nutritionists they were putting in for the past 3 years and what it was doing for the players. Also, like what they're doing now, I think is they were not doing like more doing other things, which I don't if you have seen the Patriots documentary on Apple Plus, where like Tom Brady was talking about this new like thing that you're doing more yoga practices and all that to have more like not the big muscles for the weight and all that, but more like strengthen the muscles itself and also be leaner. I mean, Derrick Henry is also doing the same, and you can see him playing at 30 in a level where you think like, whoa, I've never seen a running back playing in this age like this good and all that. So this is really also a good thing, but for me, it could have happened like a little bit earlier.
Okay, I mean, that's fair. So Steve Saunders and Greg Roman are good examples of that late to go. Now, is that all of your list? Because I had three additions to it, if you don't. Okay. All right, I've got three extra cons, and they are of varying degrees of not particularly important or very much overcomable, but here's my three. I think he wants to please the media with information, but sometimes he shares too much. And this is particularly true of injuries. the easiest way to keep your injury secret is to say, we're not going to talk about injuries. My only comment is no comment. And that is the appropriate response if you're in any kind of mergers and acquisition work. Anybody asks you about that, that may be fishing for information about is company A going to buy company B? My only comment is no comment. I can never comment about such things. And by the way, Harbaugh has very strict rules that his coordinators, when they go to the stand, are not allowed to discuss injuries at all. If he would impose that rule upon himself and basically just say, I'm not going to talk about injuries at all, that's fine. But what he usually does is something that's not good. He basically says, I'm not going to discuss injuries he'll be playing when he's playing when there's a player who might be out for a while. And when he thinks the player is going to be back soon, he says, no, I think we have good news on that front. I expect him to play Sunday. I expect him to play Sunday. I expect him to play Sunday. You're giving away too much information if you'll only talk about it on one side, but you won't talk about it if the news is really bad. So basically, he's being mined for information within his own press conferences in a way that I don't like. I would, even though I'm a person who might ask such a question, he's got to not give in to the temptation to give good news and just say nothing.
Yeah, I think also that I feel like this is also a thing where I don't know why, but this is also a week-to-week thing. So there are some weeks where it's just really tight-lipped about these things.
Yep.
And some weeks you just open this up and all that. I mean, also understand, like, you want to give context and all that, but still, yeah, you're right into that. Like, either do it one way or the other, but of course, tight-lip is better because it's always an advantage for other teams to know about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the way the NHL has moved to upper body injuries, lower body injuries. They don't give you anything more than that. They won't tell you anything about time frames or anything like that. Harbaugh is, he's so good in so many ways with the media, but he just does not need to expand on injury questions or respond to injury questions. Used to be, okay, in training camp, there's always a bunch of soft tissue injuries that occur every training camp. And usually that means a hamstring injury, and he doesn't really want to talk about it. So he'll talk about soft tissue. He's not going further into it. But sometimes, and Jerry Coleman was a guy who asked a lot of questions about this in particular. He would get really angry with Jerry about injury questions. The easiest way to shut it down is just to have the same response to every single injury question. It's basically, I'm not going to talk about injuries. Let's move on to something else.
Basically doing the Belichick thing.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I'll give you another negative I have on the list. I think it's something to be discussed. I think he has a very high rookies got to earn it culture perspective. And I think to a certain degree, that's good. You want rookies to come into the NFL to learn the Ravens way and to do it the Ravens way. On the other hand, when you got a more talented rookie that's sitting behind an untalented player, and the big one I can think of in recent years is Orlando Brown sitting for 7 or 8 games behind James Hurst. I think it was 7 games. I just didn't see any reason for that. I didn't see any logical reason for it, but it was what it was. I think that sometimes Harbaugh is too slow to get rookies involved. Now, Zay Flowers, they got involved in the offense right away. It wasn't a problem, but there have been cases in recent years where the rookies got to earn it has played too heavily into the Harbaugh way of doing things.
Yeah, but honestly, this is something I have to say where, as a fan, I don't see like the ends, because I'm not talking to the players. I don't see the progress. I see the point. I also feel like sometimes it would have been nice to get the players through the groin planes by just let them play like more like a full set instead of rotating them in. But on the other hand, I have to say, I'm not the coach, so I don't know like how it is in trainings and all that.
All right, last thing on my list is I think John Harbaugh has had some really poor draft judgment over the last few years. And Ben Cleveland is a guy he's flip-flopped on. He really wanted him. Ben Cleveland was his guy, reportedly. And then he didn't want him once he got here. I guess he saw some work ethic things or whatever might otherwise have pissed him off about Ben Cleveland. But this is the Ravens live in a balanced GM and head coach system. They've siloed system. The general manager is responsible for all elements of football development, football operations, other than the play of the games themselves, which goes to Harbaugh. and his entire coaching staff is his responsibility. There's nobody that can overrule John Harbaugh on a coaching decision other than perhaps Steve Bisciotti. He's the only one because he is Harbaugh's boss, and in theory, he could come down and say, no, I'm not letting you hire that guy as defensive coordinator. He doesn't meet our needs to have a younger guy. His next-door neighbor, Eric DaCosta, can have a conversation over the fence with him, and John Harbaugh can completely ignore it and hire whoever he wants into the organization. So that's an important thing. I don't know how they handle the budgetary component of this, by the way, because that's always been something interesting, is John Harbaugh probably says to somebody on Steve Bisciotti's staff, I want to hire so-and-so, and I want to pay him, you know, a salary that he's happy with. He says he wants $2.5 million per year, whatever it might be. Can we do that? I don't know how he gets approval for those kind of decisions, but I would imagine that Bisciotti or someone that Bisciotti trusts one notch down from him is in on those things. In terms of the draft judgment, though, I think Harbaugh can be completely excluded from that process in the same way that EDC can be excluded from the coaching process, a coach hiring process, is that you allow him to speak and then you ignore him and you pick who you want. And if there's a tantrum in the room, there's a tantrum in the room on draft night. But I personally believe in the balanced system, and I think the Ravens have really made it work over their entire history. I would not change it at this point, given the how well it has worked.
Yeah, but the thing is, for me, I understand that. But for me, there's in my mind, this is what EDC was saying in the conference, is that actually draft is always hit and miss. So that's why they want to have a lot of picks, because you never know how this is working out. So that's why I would say also, like, if you keep Harbaugh out of this process, I think this is not good for the culture, because then it could be feel like he's not getting like maybe sometimes the players he wants. And I don't know, because the organization is always about trust and always about talking through things. If I would do something like that, I would do it in the way that maybe like allow him to have his input and all that, in the way that like having a lot of conversations before, and then but having it in the way like, okay, like we have this scenario, we have that scenario, and you give me like an idea like what you would do in this scenario, and then I can decide. But like excluding him in a way that he's not part of the draft process,
I'm definitely not saying that. I'm saying he's in the room, and he should be in the room. Mm-hmm. Like your head coach, if he's not in the room on draft night, that's a problem. And if he's not saying, hey, I'd like it to be A, but his opinion probably should matter less than my top scout's opinion. So he's one of many voices in the room. He's not the only voice, and the GM handles the roster. That's the way that works. You know, the coach handles how to use that roster, but the GM handles the roster. You go back to Moneyball and the way that the Oakland A's were run, and that way you're going to see similar things to that. It is one of the things. Head coaches generally have a different time horizon than other people, and it's incredible. The group that has the longest time horizon of anyone is your most loyal fans and season ticket holders. They have an infinite time horizon. The people, not. I'm not saying everybody on Twitter, because most of them, they want change now. But fans are happy tanking for a draft pick, okay? And they're excited to get a little bit higher draft pick. The ownership can't really afford to do that because it might affect revenue. So they have a shorter term horizon on this, like, you know, maybe like a CEO. If you go down to the head coach, his job's on the line if he doesn't have now performance. So he's very concerned about providing that. The GM has to decide, you know, how much leash do I have in having a long run. But it's funny, because it's kind of just the opposite. The fans are the people who have the longest term view of success for the team there is, and it's very different from other avenues of life, where the, you know, CEOs in particular, for example, they need success right now. That takes us to the end of that. So here's what we had 10 negatives, sorry, 10 pros and eight negatives. And I'm calling out to people again, first of all, thanks for putting together a great list of pros and cons. And the reason I had you on, Carson, is that you did the best of everybody who sent in material.
Thank you very much.
yours was the best of that. And I had a lot of other people send in good material. Really appreciate that. And I want to have those folks on the panel, but we're going to start with something like this. And what I want to do is try to create a weightings system and a weightings and ratings system for these items, plus any additional you want to add to this list. So if you're listening to this show, tell us, send me a DM on Twitter. I'll add it potentially to the list if you have an additional pro or con for Harbaugh, and we'll include that in further discussions. Carson, tell folks where they can talk football with you online if they want to.
So probably the most is when you go on now X, former Twitter, because there I'm the carrier of the German flock. And maybe later, because at the moment the German flock or the German Ravens are a little bit in a slumber mode after the London game. So I try to reactivate that. And maybe like in the near future, we also have a Discord server where they can talk with us.
Okay. All right. A Discord server at some point. Okay. So there are a number of Discord servers already for talking football, but you want one specifically for German fans, right?
Of course. Okay. Because we want to build them up. I mean, there is now a high chance that there are some German Raven games, and we want to have all the people welcoming in a really, really heartwarming break.
All right. We'll be looking forward to coming over to Germany for a game if they end up playing in. Where are the games being played this year? Munich and somewhere else?
They're in Berlin, actually, Berlin. This year. Okay. So it's basically the first time that my hometown city is having an NFL season game there. So okay. Especially also at the Olympic Stadium, which could be really, really interesting. So I'm looking forward to that. Don't know if they can get
the 1936 tickets. Olympic Stadium, or is this a different?
Yes, it's the 1936. It's the historic one.
Wow. Okay, yeah. That'll bring back some memories. okay, that should be an interesting thing to do. I'm actually surprised that the NFL would be interested in doing that. I mean, for a lot of reasons, that's a triumph for Americans in terms of their performance there. Of course, for people who don't know the history of the 36 German Olympics, that's the Jesse Owens Olympics. So he had a remarkable Olympics, but the Germans overall had a fantastic Olympic performance, as most home teams did during that era. For instance, even in 1912 at Stockholm, Sweden led the world in gold medals. But anyway, so 1936, Hitler made it a priority, of course, to be exceptionally competitive. And got really upset when Owens won his gold medals. But I'm surprised that the NFL is going in on having a game there.
Actually, I'm also really surprised in the way that because it's a historic building, and Germany, the laws, you're not allowed to change the building. But the NFL's locker room is double the size of a soccer team. So I'm really curious to find out how they managed that, if they bent some rules and extended that, or what they're doing.
It's outside what it might be, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's they... It's very interesting. Well, I'll be interested if the Ravens play there. I don't want them playing a home game there, of course. Nobody does. But if they play a road game in Germany, that'd be fun to go see.
So let's hope for that. I mean, rumors are saying maybe 2027. So let's see.
Okay. All right, Carson, real pleasure having you on. Other folks out there, hit me up with your responses to this show on Twitter. It would be great if you want them discussed when I post the link to it. Or otherwise, you could just send me a DM directly. Carson, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken. It was really a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority. But to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. Obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one compliance solution helping startups get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. Vanta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. The platform connects you with trusted experts to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vanta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including Y Combinator and Techstar startups, who trust Vanta. For a limited time, get $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/simplify. That's VANTA.com/simplify for $1,000 off.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.